Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome back to Circles of Change. It's a pleasure, as always, to cut across the literary world, but even more so, those who are really looking to make a living with what life matters. And I would like to welcome then Mr. Ken Budd to the show. Ken, good morning. How are you today?
I am very good. It's good to be here. Thank you.
You bet. Well, Ken's new book, folks, is The Voluntourist. And for those of you who are streaming, it's www.thevoluntouristbook.com. Ken is currently the executive director of the AARP, the magazine, with whom he has been affiliated for 15 years now. And that is a magazine, by the way, that has 30 million readers, which makes it the world's largest circulation magazine out there. A resident of Burke, Virginia, which is near Washington, D.C., with his wife, Julie, Ken is an award-winning writer, and his credits include The Smithsonian, Stuff, The Washington Post, McSweeney's, Modern Humorist, and Worldview, which is the magazine of the Peace Corps. He's also a frequent guest on national television and a conference speaker for his profession, education, and travel organizations, courtesy of the book we're going to talk about. Ken is a graduate of George Mason University with a BA and MA in English, and early in his career he was with the Common Ground magazine, published by the Community Association Institute, where he later became the director of publications. For those of you who follow our show, you know for about the last 4 years I close almost every show by saying, if you're struggling with a difficult change in your career or your life, start by helping someone else, and you may be surprised how much clarity and direction this will lend to your own journey. Well, quite honestly, there's no finer match to this call for action than Ken, whose recent memoir is The Voluntourist. It's a direct result of a courageous journey in more ways than one for him to make sense of losing his father, accepting his fate, and finding his destiny, or I would probably say at least part of it, by volunteering in countries of need around the world. And Ken has not done it, but not once, but actually six times in 2 weeks at a time. So again, Ken, what a marvelous work. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. That was wonderful.
You've been up. There you go. Well, tell me something. The first time that you answered, I think the way this journey started, you were searching with the loss of such a great man, and an email came your way, and it prompted an action. Really? It was an email?
It was an email, yeah. And you know, there was a lot of serendipity here. This was not like a planned journey, at least early on. I was at work, and kind of knew that I'm looking for something, and this opportunity came up through my job to volunteer in New Orleans for a week. They were looking for unskilled people, and without even really thinking about it, I said, yes, I will do this, and that sort of started it.
And this was not too long after the horrific Katrina incident, wasn't it?
Yeah, when I got to New Orleans, it was 9 months after the flood, and it was still, it was kind of jaw-dropping to get there and see the scale of what had happened there, and it's one thing to see it on TV, it's quite another when you're actually there.
Yeah. Well, I love, though, how you said the email said we're looking for unskilled people. Now, my friend, you're extremely skilled, but perhaps not skilled in the things they wanted.
Being a writer and editor, you don't have, like, practical skills. I am not a carpenter, but the way they have it worked is pretty smart, that they have skilled volunteers who lend their time, and they come in and do the serious stuff. They do the plumbing and put in new walls, and then someone like me will come in and do the painting and help move a family back in, or haul trash, or whatever really basic work is needed.
Yeah. Well, Ken, the loss of your dad, take us back to that, because that's obviously your writing, whether it would have been journaling at the time. I mean, did you even realize this was probably going to manifest in a memoir?
No, I never had any clue this was going to happen, and I was hitting one of those points in life where I was coming up on 40, which is always a good time for the midlife crisis, and my wife and I looked like we weren't going to have kids, and I was really kind of struggling with that. And then my dad died, and he died very suddenly. He had been retired about a year. He was playing golf, and he finished 18 holes and just collapsed, and that was the end. And it's a really jarring thing for people who've experienced that. It's always tough to lose a parent, but when it happens, in a snap like that, it was stunning. And once he was gone, I start getting these letters from people who worked for him, people who knew him, and they're writing us and saying, you know, your father really changed my life.
Yeah.
And you're reading these letters and going, well, first off, what am I doing? And secondly, what are people going to say when it's my turn? And that really got me thinking about things.
Wow. So that the evolving story, and for those, again, who may have just tuned in, we have the pleasure of having Ken Budd with us, and his book is called The Voluntourist. Ken, that is a term that's being picked up on it, but tell us your definition of that term, voluntourist.
Well, you know, it's interesting because even the like nonprofits that offer these trips can't decide what to call them. Some call them voluntourism, some call them volunteer vacations, but it's typically a short-term volunteer experience. And you know, most of us can't take 2 years to join the Peace Corps, so this is a way to do something. And I did in 2 weeks. Other people, you can do it up to 3 months, but basically, it's a short-term volunteer experience.
So there's a little bit of an escape hatch then with this, if you've really stepped off the deep end in something that might be totally uncomfortable.
Well, yeah, it was interesting, and I write about it in the book. When I got to Costa Rica, there was some young college girl there, and I immediately noticed her in the airport because she just looked completely freaked out, and she, you know, it was a 2-hour drive to get to where we were, and by the next morning, she was gone. She had gone home. But I always thought there was a lesson there, too. I thought you can't make a snap judgment like that. You know, you've got to stick it out, and that's part of the experience. And I always found that. Every time I got to one of these countries or assignments, I would think, well, this was a big mistake. What am I doing here? You know, I'm an idiot. And it was only when I got home that I would step back and say, wow, you know, that was...
It was truly profound.
Yeah.
Yeah. In fact, you know, it comes to mind that movie with Billy Crystal, The City Slickers, where he thinks he's going on a trip to go experience the wilds of Wyoming and the cattle drive, and he finds himself having to help birth a cow, where he loses his Rolex watch, by the way. And he says so profoundly, this wasn't in the brochure. You know, and honestly, I think, Ken, you were looking for stuff that was off the brochure. I mean, not viscerally in the brochure, meaning it was off topic, shall we say, or really outside on the fringe, weren't you?
Yeah, and you know, I found everywhere I went that you go thinking you're going to do a specific job, you're going to help teach English or something. But I think the most beneficial thing was there's this cultural exchange that occurs between you as an American and, you know, wherever you are. I was in China, I was in Kenya, but also between you and other volunteers. I was with a lot of European volunteers, and you find, as this happens, you know, these sort of misconceptions we have about each other start to fall a bit. But I was looking to be on kind of the fringes, as you said, and when I was in Costa Rica, an English volunteer told me, you only learn about yourself when you're outside your comfort zone, and I really tried to embrace that, and I tried to do things that made me a little uncomfortable and go to places that I had not been to before, and I think he was right, that you have to step back from your life to really appreciate your life or to, you know, to look at it in a different way.
Well, you know, and let's give our readers just a synopsis here. When we say Ken was out of his comfort zone, trust me, the idea of going to China to a remote section to where you don't speak the language and then be working with special needs children on top of it. I mean, is there any more layer of uncomfort you could put on that one?
Well, out of everywhere I went, that was the most discombobulated I felt. And I always felt like, later, of course, that one or the other would have been intense. You know, I have no experience with special needs kids. That alone would have been a learning curve. Throw in the fact that you don't speak Chinese, and most of the teachers there really didn't either. You know, a few of them could throw a few words out. University students would sometimes come, and they could. But my first day, I had a little pad, and I wrote on it, culture shock overload. And that's exactly how I felt. It was just because you're there, and you're supposed to be productive, too, and so I...
Oh, yeah, by the way.
Yeah. Well, I often say it'd be like going to your first day of work, and everyone speaks Klingon, you know? It's just a jarring thing, and so one or the other would have been tense. Both was, like, off the charts.
But it was wonderful, you know, your trip to Katrina to rebuild homes in Costa Rica, teach school, China, work with special needs kid in Ecuador to study and document climate change. Oh, my gosh, your descriptions of the bugs, the snakes, the creatures. I'm like, yeah, that would be really out of your comfort zone. Beaming up Scotty, speaking of. You know, and then Palestine, you know, the profound statements you make about the meanings behind walls and graffiti. Your observation skills, Ken, as a journalist, and you're living this experience real time, are just profound in your writing.
Oh, I really appreciate that. Thank you. And yeah, the Palestinian experience was, I think, out of all the ones I did, was the most difficult. And, you know, I went there without any religious agenda or political agenda. But I think as Americans, we have a certain view of the situation there. And then you get there, and you realize these people live very, very difficult lives, and they deal with a lot of nonsense just trying to get about their daily lives, and you can be stopped at any time, and you're dealing with checkpoints, and there's this horrific wall which is, you know, almost twice the size of the Berlin Wall that just cuts through everything. And so it was a real eye-opener for me, and I think for most of the volunteers.
Well, and also the fact that you have multiple generations now who have been born into those conditions. These weren't just things that were imposed on from a recent war. So that normal life for the children is and has and may always be living in that environment.
Yeah, and I found the children there particularly sad because they do grow up with this sort of a deep inferiority complex. And I, after I got back, and I think I mentioned the book, I was researching depression levels in the West Bank and in Gaza, and it's just, it's huge for people, you know, 20 and under, especially in like in a place like Gaza. But yeah, I think they're growing up with not just this inferiority complex, but, you know, all the bitterness that comes with it.
Sure, and, exactly.
And I tell a story in the book about, you know, the kids trying to get attention by holding up like armaments and, you know, shell fragments they had found, and, you know, that this is the way you got attention, was like, hey, look at me, I'm holding a shell here, you know, and that just, it saddened me.
Yeah, the reality of a totally different part of the world. You mentioned your interaction now with really a cosmopolitan group of people that chose to take these volunteer vacations, we'll call them, but in terms of your interactions with the people locally on the ground, you know, I think maybe sometimes we Westerners take for granted the fact that it really is in our culture to give and to volunteer and to help others, whereas other cultures can view that with tremendous suspicion and fear that there's some other agenda. Did you confront any of that type of pushback or suspicion, or were you folks just so welcomed with open arms because there was so much need?
Yeah, well, I've since read, you know, there's criticisms of people who do these types of trips that it's some sort of neo-colonial type of thing, and certain programs aren't nearly as well run as the ones I did. I went with pretty established groups that were run by locals there on the ground, and, you know, they were really forming partnerships. And
right.
So, you know, I think in each place where I went, this was a case of, like at the school in China, had read about Global Volunteers, which was the organization I was with, and said, hey, we would like to have volunteers here. I think what happens sometimes is it works the other way around. You have a group saying, hey, I'd like to send some volunteers somewhere, which makes a big difference. So, yeah, where I was, everyone was very welcoming, and again, I got this continuing sense that the work was helpful, but it was just being there. And I really felt that in China because these teachers work really, really difficult jobs, and they're just tremendously kind and patient women. And I was there with a friend, and having us there really broke up their routine, I thought. And it was fun for them, and they would try out English on us, and they would try and teach us words. And, you know, so even though you're struggling to communicate, you're still communicating somehow. And you know, when I would do something dumb, they would laugh. And so I found out after we left, one of the teachers said, we seem to laugh more when we have volunteers here. And I think that was important, I think. You know,
that's a lovely gift that you could bring, laughter. And, of course, working with children, I know to cross those language barriers, you cite wonderful examples of doing the hokey pokey and singing and dancing. And there's some real universality in dance and music, isn't there?
There is. And yeah, it was an interesting thing. And you find both the limitations of not being able to speak the same language, and you also realize that it's irrelevant on a certain level. That, and I've always felt with one of these, there were three teachers in the class where I was at, and one in particular, we kind of tended to communicate as best we could, but I've always thought, you know, I could show up 20 years from now, and this woman's going to be like, you know, I want you to stay in my home, and you make those kind of connections on a level that's sort of beyond language.
Yeah. Well, it was your father's death that launched you on this journey of self-discovery, I would say, at the same time of giving to others. So tell me, your dad is now sitting right next to you. Ken, what would he say about this book?
Well, you know, I've wondered this a lot because, and people have asked me this, and, you know, because my father was a really special guy. He grew up extremely poor, but he was really smart, and he was ambitious and driven, and he never went to college, but he made it to upper management with some Fortune 500 companies. But he never forgot where he started. He never forgot what it was like to be hungry. And so he was always good about taking people with him and encouraging people. And there's a story I tell in the book of his retirement party where, at least, it was, first off, people kept telling me, I've never seen this many people at a retirement party, but about a third of them were people he had laid off, and they were there because they knew how much he had fought to get them all a management-level severance package, which was not easy. And So I've always thought, you know, because of that nature, I think he would appreciate everything I did. And but because he grew up from hard circumstances, I've often thought he would say, you know, pal, you've got it pretty good. Maybe you need to lighten up here. So, but I think he would be thrilled. And it's one of these sort of twists in life that, you know, here I am trying so hard to live up to his life. But I think in some ways he thought my sister and I had surpassed him because we did go to college and we got degrees. So so I think our perspectives would be similar, but perhaps a little different.
Well, I think the other thing is, now you talked about early on saying turning 40, midlife crisis. For those of us who are slightly older than that or considerably older than that, we still feel we're trying to grow up. So, you know, yeah. if you think you've already been on a journey of change up until now, let me tell you, you ain't heard nothing yet. And particularly for someone who's reached out and, you know, and seen the parts of the world that you had. Now, Ken, had you traveled much internationally or certainly into some of these, you know, more difficult parts of the world beforehand?
I had traveled some to Europe, but mm-hmm. And that was part of, you know, after I did the first two trips, that's when I kind of made a conscious decision, like, okay, I want to go places I've never been. I want to go places that intimidate me a little bit. So, yeah, I had traveled some, but not certainly like in a place like the West Bank or in Africa or anywhere like that.
Mm-hmm. I mentioned in the introduction, of course, that by day you are the executive editor of AARP, the magazine. So another part of your life is you're being the volunteerist. But I'd like to ask you the question, so how have these six trips, which you took over a period of years, right, how has it reflected back then into your role as an executive editor, particularly of a magazine that's all about inspiring people in the encore parts of their lives?
Well, there's certainly, I think, a fit. You know, AARP has a program called Create the Good to help you find places to volunteer. And, you know, for me personally, having done all this, yeah, I'm a pretty mellow guy anyway, but I find that, you know, the small things really seem small to me now. And you know, when you have the guy in traffic who cuts you off or whatever, it's like, you know, it doesn't really, it just kind of slides off a little bit. But I think the thing that's happiest to me is that I've made continued connections with the people I met along the way. And I feel less like a Virginian or an American, and it sounds sort of cornball, but I really feel like a person of the world. And you know, I keep in touch with fellow volunteers. I keep in touch with people I met on, you know, who were locals. I go on Facebook. It looks like the UN sometimes. It's like, well, that's Arabic. I can't read that.
That one, right. I love it. I should mention to our listeners, by the way, Ken's book, The Volunteerist, and you can learn more about it by going to www.thevolunteeristbook.com, is that the proceeds from this book, by the way, are to benefit the six areas and organizations you were part of. And what a wonderful give forward, Ken.
Yeah, you know, I felt like, you know, you go and see these people and then you see the amazing work. So I'm like the woman who started this special needs school in China, she did it with nothing. The woman who formed the children's home in Kenya, same thing. She just did it through faith and determination and had no resources. And so, yeah, I just thought, how can we help these people? And so I did not get a big book advance, alas, but the money from the advance, we've been carving it up into six slices to help everywhere where I went, and that's been really the best part of this whole thing.
The whole aspect of sustaining the change that you went through, let's say in those first one or two trips that you took, you know, you could tell there was some cooking and boiling inside of yourself, right? And so you made decisions then to take subsequent trips. Were those trips scheduled purposely based on, oh, gee, I need a six-month breather now, I'm going to go take that trip, or did they kind of vicariously come to you the way the first one did?
The first two, there really was sort of a serendipity thing. You know, New Orleans, I got this email. When I went to Costa Rica, AARP has like a one-month sabbatical program, and one thing about losing my dad the way we did is you kind of realize, well, I got to live for the moment here, so I immediately took this thing. And I thought, well, I don't want to spend 4 weeks sitting around, you know, sleeping late and watching television. So we decided, my wife went with me, and we went to Costa Rica. But after Costa Rica, I kind of thought, okay, I've done my little We Are the World thing. It's time to be normal again. And it really took some time before I started thinking, you know, I think that was like the start of this, not the thing itself. And so that's when I really made a conscious decision to do four more and to do them in places that scared me a little.
Yeah. You closed the very first section on telling us about Katrina with a quote, which is what hooked me. No question about it, why I couldn't put your book down, is you close the chapter by saying, we drive home, a route we've taken many times before. I'm not sure what's next. And sometimes in life you can drive a familiar road and still not know where you're going. And so these six trips, was it to find out where you're going, Ken, or just to maximize where you are?
Well, yeah, I think it's a little bit of all that. You know, you make these journeys, but it's not like in the movies where I think you go from point A to point B and then everything's done. That's I sort of feel like, and I say at the end, you know, the journey's over and the journey's just beginning. So mm-hmm. I keep feeling like, well, there's another crossroads coming somewhere up here, and I'm not sure what it is. And that's how life works. You know, life shouldn't be an interstate where you're just always going straight. You know, you should get off on that side road, and there are going to be more turns, but that's kind of what makes it interesting. So, yeah, I don't know what's next, and I'm sort of curious to see what happens. But certainly this was one of the bigger journeys, though, in my life.
So to be able to produce a book like this that is so detailed and so visual, you know, I feel like I was right with you when you dealt with some of those challenges in these different locations around the world, which would have had me jumping out of my skin, by the way. But, you know, you've got over 400 pages. Journaling and then moving this into a memoir form, did it come to you really fluidly?
Well, there was an obvious structure because it was kind of, you know, there was a clear journey here. But I was trying to be real conscious of a couple things. To me, a memoir should read like a novel, even though everything's real. It should have that pace and it should grip you. And I'm actually a very private person, and this is a very personal book.
Yeah.
So it was not easy. But I also think you have to write about what scares you. Readers know if you're not being honest. And there really has to be something at stake, and there was here. And I wanted the book to be funny, too. I mean, it's partly my voice, but it's partly, you know, the whole do-gooder thing might get a little annoying after a while. So,
well, I think also that there's a tremendous amount of poignancy laced in humor when it's done right, and that's what I picked up in your message. I laughed and giggled at how you wrote, but then at the same time I said, ouch. You know, some of those humorous things are really going right into that epicenter of your heart to twist it.
Well, and it's been really a pleasure to me to hear from readers who have said kind of what you just said, that, you know, it made me laugh, it made me cry. And what I've really found, too, which has been great, is that it's my story, but people see it through the prism of their own lives.
Exactly.
And I've had people tell me, you know, it made me rethink my relationship with my father. And one woman told me, you know, we had this discussion at work about legacy and what we want to do with the last part of our lives. And so that has been unexpected and really fun.
Well, and in fact, whether you realized it or not, while the book is The Voluntourist, a six-country tale of love, loss, fatherhood, fate, and singing Bon Jovi in Bethlehem, you know, your second subtitle would be Living a Life That Matters. And there's so many people, countless people out there looking for that, and to have you boldly and courageously, as you said, you know, really reveal your soul and share that story was really important. Well, Ken, how do you, I'm certain that you've gotten, you're on the speaker's tour, on the book tour, the signings, inspiring people to buy the book for donations and the like. You know, you really gave birth to a child, although I know you and your wife don't have children. So how's this new child taken your life, though, in new ways?
It is like a child. It's just as painful, I think.
No, and happy then. I think happy.
It's definitely been a life-changing thing, and just from a practical standpoint, I feel like I have two careers sometimes. Yeah. So, but it's been fantastic to me to make these connections with people, and when I have done speaking appearances, you know, people wind up coming up to you and telling you their story, and I'm always thinking, yeah, you're the one that should be speaking up here, not me.
So I see a sequel in the making or another round of trips. Well, Ken Budd, thank you so very much. Ken, again, is executive director of AARP, the magazine. His new book is The Voluntourist, a six-country tour of love, loss, fatherhood, fate, singing Bon Jovi in Bethlehem. Go to www.thevoluntouristbook.com and know that the proceeds of your purchasing that book and enjoying it as much as I did will further the causes that Ken has already contributed to. Ken, thanks so much. And have a great weekend.
Thank you. This was great.
You bet. My pleasure.
Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsongroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.